Welcome to Healthcare Upside Down, a podcast by Becker's Healthcare and ECG Management Consultants, in which we'll explore the upsides and downsides of healthcare and the industry's most current trends. I'm Molly Gamble, and today I'm thrilled to be joined by three guests. We have Dr. Christy Page, Executive Dean of UNC School of Medicine and Chief Academic Officer with UNC Health, Dr. Pradeep Kadambi, President and CEO at University of Florida Jacksonville Physicians, and Leah Gassett, Partner with ECG Management Consultants. Dr. Page, Dr. Kadambi, Leah, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me pause here and ask for each of you to introduce yourselves a bit more. Tell us a bit more about your professional background and the work you're most focused on today. Dr. Page, can I turn to you first?
Sure, happy to. Thanks for having me on the show today. So as you said, I'm Executive Dean at the UNC School of Medicine and also hold a role in UNC Health as the Chief Academic Officer. I'm an active family physician and delighted to get to serve the state and the people of North Carolina in the roles that I have. To give just a little context for the listeners, School of Medicine at UNC is a leading public medical school, strong in both primary care and research, with well over $600 million in annual funding. UNC Health is broad and all across the state. It's a nearly $8 billion enterprise in terms of net patient revenues that spans the state with 15 hospitals, nearly 45,000 teammates, and over 600 clinics. And so we really blend the strength of the academic medical center and of academics with community medicine in a beautiful way. You would ask what we're most focused on, and I'm very focused right now on the development and implementation of our UNC Health and UNC School of Medicine's new strategic plan efforts, which will be focused on increasing access, providing greater satisfaction for our teammates, enhancing our workforce pipelines, and growing our research impact. So really very focused on all the elements that span all three missions of clinical care, research, and education and academics.
Thanks, Dr. Page. Dr. Kadambi, can we turn to you next?
Hey, I'm Pradeep Kadambi. Again, thanks for having me on this podcast. I'm a transplant nephrologist by background, and I, as stated, I serve as the president and CEO for faculty practice, and I'm responsible for more than 70 clinical sites, 470 physicians, 360 advanced practice providers, and 1,200 support staff. And we have an annual operating budget of close to $400 million. The two things that I'm focused on today, one is access to care, which we are defining as the right care at the right time, in the right setting. And it's also coming, the right cost, right? So we want to make sure of we are addressing the cost as well. The second thing that I'm also focused on is using data to drive change. By that, I mean to say that we want to transform data to information, to knowledge, to wisdom, and we are going to use this wisdom to drive change.
Thank you, Dr. Kadambi. And Leah, let's hear from you.
Great to be with you. I joined ECG about 18 years ago after working for a really large safety net provider here in the New England market. And today I lead ECG's academic healthcare division. So our division works primarily with university and health system boards and executive teams, as well as other medical school and health science university leaders and faculty practice leaders as well. And really, we work with all of these organizations and their components to deliver across all of their missions. Much of the work that we're focused on today involves strategic planning as well as performance improvement, particularly for the academic enterprise within the academic health system, and a fair amount of academic health system organizational design, really aimed at fostering greater integration and greater alignment of the different components within the academic health system. Again, to advance them across all of their missions, be that research, education, patient care, or public service.
Thanks, Leah. I'm really eager to learn from each of you on this topic of academic medicine and health systems today. You know, AMCs, they could be a masterclass in organizational science. Their size, their many different stakeholders, their complexity, all these things often leave them perceived as slower to react to market dynamics. So to start us off, as the pace of change in healthcare continues to accelerate and we are poised for major disruptions in the industry ahead, what do you see as really critical for AMCs to succeed? Dr. Kadambi, can I turn to you first for your thoughts?
Sure. You know, again, as has already been described, academic medical centers have many missions, right? And all are equally important. But not all missions have a financial margin. For example, research, education, they're generally negative margin missions, but they're very, very important for us to train the next generation of clinicians and support staff, and also creating new knowledge. This is in the very DNA of the AMCs. And also many AMCs also they serve as safety net hospitals, and this actually further creates pressure on the clinical margins as well. And these missions, you know, need subsidies for long-term sustainability. So AMCs are critically important for a variety of reasons, but that doesn't mean to say that, no, we cannot reinvent ourselves. And, you know, it is already happening, you know, whether it's through strategic partnerships. I was in the middle of a partnership between University of Arizona and Banner Health. And here at University of Florida, you know, we have acquired several hospitals in Central Florida, and most recently, Flagler Health. Now, I just heard that, you know, UNC has 15 hospitals in their portfolio. So it's actually important that, you know, we form these strategic partnerships and also diversify, you know, grant funding, especially for scholarship. And we also need to pursue philanthropy, because donors really want to give either for specific programs or specific research interests. So we need to figure out as to how to engage donors in a meaningful conversations, especially in the mission, the vision, and the strategy of the organization. Also promote entrepreneurship, right? So it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, somebody has to be in a lab. So we have UF Innovate, which actually promotes entrepreneurship. We encourage startups, you know, spin-offs, et cetera, that can actually create excitement for not only physicians, but also other researchers to be part of the organization. So we also need to look at efficiency and cost optimization, right? So within healthcare, there's a lot of wastage. And with academic medical centers, because we also serve as training facilities, perhaps actually could be a little bit more. So how do we leverage technology, automation, AI to complement the tasks that humans do these days? And I'm going to close with saying that education is critical. You know, every physician needs to know the basics of the business of healthcare, how healthcare is financed, what makes a margin, why it is important, and how the operations can be optimized. They need to be engaged and also aligned with some of the concepts. Right now, there's a fundamental disconnect between who earns the revenue within the health system and who controls it, right? So there has to be, you know, much more alignment in this area. The bottom line is AMCs are here to stay, and they're in the process of reinvention. But I would also say that needs to happen a little bit more swiftly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Kadambi. I mean, you just hit on the simultaneous demands and needs that AMCs fill. Dr. Page, let me turn to you. What would you add when we think about what you see as critical for AMCs to succeed in the next few years ahead?
Well, certainly Dr. Kadambi said it so well and really articulated the essence of the answer here. But I would just want to acknowledge what you said in your question, that it is true that academic health systems have been slower to move, in part because they're so complex and the governance structures. And then for us at UNC, there's a real culture that prioritizes consensus and sometimes avoids conflict. And, you know, you can't run a business on consensus. But the pandemic really forced us to make a lot of hard decisions very quickly. And it helped us to build trust with our teams and really build some confidence that we can do hard things together and that we can do them at a much, much faster pace than we had in the past. So we're really working to continue to build on that culture of trust and accountability so that we can tackle these hard challenges together and do it at a really swift pace. And I would underscore and add that the ability to calculate the return on investment from academics really helps us in our organization, because we see that symbiotic nature that hopefully we'll talk about today. of what we that we need the academic medical center. We need those academic missions in order to rise all, you know, all boats rise together. And also what Dr. Kandabi said about strategic partnerships, those partnerships with industry and other health systems and other partners can really accelerate change. And that the necessity of us to not all try to build the solutions ourselves, but really work together and partner in those spaces where others in non-healthcare businesses can often greatly accelerate. So right now we're partnering with Microsoft and doing a whole host of AI pilots that are just tremendous in their ability to answer questions for patient, you know, notes to their doctor to be able to respond to those messages, partly with AI to be able to help summarize charts through AI, to be able to summarize a patient visit through ambient recording and listening and translating that into a visit note, to try to really show and demonstrate how new technology and new partnerships can truly make things better for patients and for the providers.
Mm-hmm. Leah, let me turn to you next, because I think Dr. Page and Dr. Kandabi just illustrated the very important nature of the work AMCs are doing, but also some of the organizational, cultural, and financial elements that can make their work cumbersome. You know, with increasing health system margin pressures, how are you seeing School of Medicine health system executive leaders working more creatively together to really resource and advance all of these mission areas? They can't leave anything behind, particularly that academic mission.
Yeah, I think the point that both Drs. Kandabi and Page made about partnerships is really critical, because we've looked for too many years to the health system margin to drive the subsidy required to support particularly growing research enterprises. And that is untenable given the payer environment and the other dynamics in the market that we're seeing. And so those outside partners that are, you know, for-profit, not-for-profit, other entities that are spending dollars on R&D and innovation can be really critical partners as we think creatively, given where the health system is, given where public funding is for grant opportunities. I think that's a huge area of opportunity that some organizations have been more rapid to turn to than others have been. I also think if we think about some of the other missions, and in particular consider the education mission, we have to think in a way that we have for a long time on the care mission about where are there some economies of scale or efficiencies or frankly aspects of the educational process that are somewhat less differentiated, and is there a way to more efficiently at a lower cost per unit deliver that and really focus the energies of faculty, staff, people, and learners on those more differentiated, critical to have sort of a tailored solution, and think about how we really evolve the education models, because given the debt loads that students are coming out of medical school and other health professions programs with, we need a solution to that as well. And I think that will help with some of the release on margin pressure as well.
Well, Dr. Page, with that note in mind that Leah had just established for us, let's talk about spending and finances. You know, I think as the opening remarks from both you and Dr. Kandabi show, building knowledge and new talent is not necessarily cheap. Healthcare spending is projected to reach 20% of GDP within the next decade. What is the role and responsibility of academic health systems and health sciences universities in tackling this national challenge?
Well, for patients, I mean, we're in this business for patients, and the prices are too high. And I mean, if the bottom 20% in our society are spending a third of their income to pay for healthcare, I mean, that is, we have problems. We all know this. And then for the providers, the prices are too variable. It's too complicated having different rates and different systems, some under value-based care and some in fee-for-service is not, I mean, doctors are not trained or nor motivated to try to tailor their treatment based on the payment schema, especially if it's different for each patient. But we've had some good success partnering with payers and others to push into the value contracts. And we've had good success in delivering results on those. They're just still, you know, not a big enough piece of the pie to really make a difference. But we're focusing now on making sure we're getting the right patients to the right sites of care. And I know Dr. Kandabi said the same thing, but making sure that we're getting the patients to the site that's closest to home and at a site that's the most efficient and cost efficient for those particular healthcare needs. And then to try to work together with our payers and with all of our partners to ultimately drive down the cost for the patient. Like, we can drive down cost through efficiency and all host of work that we're doing right now. We all have to do it to make it better for the patients, easier for them to get the appointment where they need it, when they need it, and so forth. And to make it, you know, easier for our providers to provide the care that they love to provide without so many barriers to do so. But then translating that into lower costs for the patients is really what we have to work together across America to do long term.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Kandabi, what would you add to what Dr. Page just shared?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Page. I think, you know, that was eloquently stated. You know, the basic premise is our payment model is not based on outcomes, right? So that's a fundamental change. If we have, like, because it's still based on volume of service, till that changes at a major scale, you cannot expect different results. So we say health, but we imply disease, right? So we also need to change the mindset from episodic care to continuous care. I mean, for example, we add new technologies every year, right? The cost is just going to increase. So there is actually very little incentive to bend the cost curve. I'm also, like, you know, draw an analogy to the automotive industry. I mean, right now, previously we used to go to a mechanic when there was a problem with the car, right? So right now we have this computer within the car that monitors every single thing as to what's going on, right? So it's sort of like, you know, being, so we talk about population health, value-based care, you know, for managing costs. So what I'm actually saying is we also need to be better as a society in preventative healthcare, which also includes our dietary habits, exercise habits. We need to reduce disease burden in the long run. So till we actually, like, you know, as a society come to a consensus that this is actually what we need to do, it's actually going to be really difficult. And we also need to engage the community better, especially as it pertains to health literacy, and also empowering them in better decision-making. I can tell you, like, you know, how many times have we all encountered, like, okay, do everything, you know, for my loved one, because this is actually what they would have wanted. So I think we still have to have some good conversations as to how these things are going to be done. And ultimately, you know, it's all about, are we providing the best long-term health care outcomes for our population? So if we are not doing that, then there's a problem, you know, maybe at a system level or regional level or the national level.
I have to jump in and say, I wish we could see each other, because I'm over here grinning from ear to ear. As a family doctor, hearing you talk about prevention and healthy-based care and, you know, really moving things towards health and well-being and community engagement is exactly what we'll have to do as a nation to improve our health and ultimately decrease the spend.
Absolutely. Again, you know, I'm a quaternary type of physician, transplant nephrologist, but again, I've seen enough of this,
yep,
kind of, like, know as to where we need to move the needle. I mean, if you can just, you know, tackle two disease states, like hypertension, diabetes, and, you know, perhaps obesity,
mm-hmm,
I mean, many of the disease burden that, you know, this nation is facing can be mitigated.
Absolutely.
Well, Leah, we've got two colleagues in North Carolina and Florida agreeing from their respective backyards. What would you add from your 30,000-foot view when we're talking about AMCs and affordability? What are you hearing?
I definitely hear some of the same challenges, obviously, with the reimbursement environment. I think I'm also hopeful that these organizations, I mean, we have tremendous specialization and we have expertise that I think is you know, compared to none in the world inside our academic health systems and academic medical centers. And I think there's a real opportunity for connection, and a lot of what we see as organizations working on, you know, you hear breaking down silos, but how do you get those experts to work with each other and really be creative around the problem solving that needs to happen? I think we have the tools, we have the data, we have models that we can look at from elsewhere. Dr. Kadambi earlier mentioned sort of having our teams collectively look at the system's impact of the changes and innovations that we're introducing into the system. I think going forward, that just has to be front and center of all the work that we do together. And as I said, I'm really hopeful that I think we have the brain power. We just need to connect people. And I think in that way, they'll continue to derive greater joy and fulfillment from the work they're doing together, which I know has been a challenge as people are faced with, you know, long hours and difficult circumstances. But this is an opportunity really to make some positive change that'll positively impact the trajectory of our cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also want to chime in that if we don't take responsibility of influencing some of these changes are going to be made for us, whether we like it or not, right? So it may be from a healthcare company or actually even a technology company. And if you look at whether it's Google, Amazon, and you know Microsoft, they're all dabbling in the healthcare space in some shape or form. So I think that kind of like behooves all of us to ensure that we are thinking alike so that we can be at the table when an opportunity for us to influence the change.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask each of you, Dr. Page and Dr. Kadambi, to just spend a moment on workforce. I'm curious, as we begin this new year, what unique and different approaches are your organizations taking to address workforce challenges? Is there anything new that you would put forward as something you're either testing out, you think has shown great promise, something else, another strategy to add to the conversation, because this is going to be a long-term challenge, something that's with us for a long time to come. Dr. Page, can I hear from you first?
Sure. I mean, big problem. We're all facing it. But we are in a wonderful position in North Carolina to have this huge UNC system of universities and colleges. The AHEC, North Carolina AHEC, is very strong, and community colleges that are also very strong across our state. And so we are working in a much more deliberate and coordinated fashion to take what we've done in the past in our school, you know, innovations in medical school education to link people with rural training and a lot of really neatly designed pipeline programs, but really to turn that on steroids and across not just the physicians, but make sure that we're thinking much more broadly with our partnerships. So right now we are doing a whole lot of work building that infrastructure with some predictive analytics to guide where we need future new training programs or where we need to grow or shrink. And that will help us in our ability to adapt to the future workforce needs, but also to go ahead and target and start new programs like for anesthesia assistants or specialized research technicians. There are certain pockets, certainly beyond the physician, social work, et cetera. And all of these partnerships with multiple educators who they need the clinical environments. So those schools and training programs need the health systems for their clinical training, and what we can do to pay for scholarships, to pay to train up the trainers, and to guarantee those jobs and link them on the back end really could start to move the needle for us. So we're focusing on that, building that out statewide. But right now, my focus is on building that out with our health system in very practical programmatic approaches and very practical partnerships within all these communities across the state to make sure we've got really strong pipelines and really strong plans to keep people nourished and wanting to stay in our health system and in our state serving for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Kadambi, you had mentioned there's 470 physicians today at University of Florida Jacksonville physicians. Anything you would add to Dr. Page's remarks about strategies around workforce in the years ahead?
Yeah, I mean, again, very well stated. So we have five health systems, you know, within our local area. They're all competing for, sometimes they don't compete for patients, but certainly competing for staff right now. We also have to, like, you know, compete with non-traditional competitors like Walmart, Subway, and retail grocery chains. You know, it's actually certainly been an issue for us. Our turnover rate is still about, you know, just a little tad less than 20% right now. It used to be 25% at the height of the pandemic. So some of the things that we're doing are upskilling existing team members to fill a void. So that, you know, we've successfully done that in several areas. And instead of using medical assistants, we are using clinical assistants. So clinical assistants, these are folks who did not match into a residency program. So they finished their medical school, did not match into residency, and they're kind of like looking to do something, you know, for a year or so. And it's actually worked out like really fantastic for us. I mean, they're very eager, they're learning, and obviously they already know how to, you know, take blood pressure, you know, temperatures and those kinds of things. So one of our department chairs actually came up with that idea, and you know, it's word of mouth. It's actually spreading really well. And for physicians, we have this program called the Medical Faculty Certificate. These are international physicians, non-US trained. They actually can come and work within our health system only, and they also get a medical license in the state of Florida. And, you know, recently the Florida Senate passed a bill to improve access to care. So there's going to be a lot more, you know, loose restrictions, you know, so, or, you know, the restrictions are going to be a little bit more loose when it comes to ensuring that people are taken care of. And we're also targeting high school students and college students and providing them with opportunities, you know, for rotations, you know, within various disciplines. And lastly, we're also, as Dr. Page mentioned, looking at training programs in allied health, whether somebody wants to be a CAA, a certified nursing associate, or they need to be an RT, et cetera. We're trying to, like, you know, figure out as to what programs there are. And we are also using technology, automation, and AI to also fill in the gaps. It's not going to be done overnight. So it's a long-term challenge, but as also was stated, we also need to create this excitement for somebody to pursue a career in the healthcare space.
Mm-hmm. Leah, before I wind down here, let me just turn to you and see if there's anything you wanted to add in closing.
I think the only thing I would add is that AMCs are well-positioned with their industry partners and with other components of their universities to really interrogate and explore that last piece, which is how do we augment the people who are providing care in the workforce with technologies? And I don't just mean information systems, that might be a big piece of it, or automation might be. But if you think about the basis of that is how do you apply scientific knowledge from any field to solve a practical problem? And I think that is an edge that AMCs have just by nature of the makeup of those organizations that's really different from a lot of other types of healthcare organizations. And I see that as one area where AMCs really do have a special role and are likely to make a big impact.
Well, thank you, Leah. And thank you, Dr. Page and Dr. Kadambi, for your time and the great discussion today on academic medicine and health systems. We also want to thank our podcast sponsor for this episode, ECG Management Consultants. You can tune in to more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckerspodcast.com. Thank you.